Hello and welcome to Louis Pasteur's birth house. Louis Pasteur was born in Dole on the 27th of December 1822. His parents, Jeanne-Étienne and Jean-Joseph Pasteur, were tanners from the Salins area, and they settled here in a working-class neighborhood on the canal banks in 1816. The couple had five children, three daughters and two sons. Louis was the third. Le Pasteur's father was a soldier in the imperial armies before he was a tanner. He drew an unlucky number at conscription and had to participate in the last campaigns of the empire. However, Jean-Joseph was lucky enough to come back alive and in good health. He came back with an open mind and the idea that there was a certain greatness to France. He could read and write, and every night after work, he would practice grammar and conjugation. He painted in his free time and appreciated Napoleonian subjects, such as the painting of the ploughman soldier. After Louis had left the family home, Jean-Joseph would regularly send him letters. The working conditions in the tannery were rough. They had to tolerate the vermin, to stand working in unsanitary water and with corrosive chemical products, as well as the rank smell of the skins. How odd to imagine the future father of hygiene taking his first steps in a bacteria breeding ground. Louis Pasteur once said that he got his tenacity from his father and his imagination from his mother. On the 14th of July 1883, he inaugurated a plaque in his own honor on the facade of his birth house in front of the Dole notables. Then he delivered an emphatic homage to his parents and the example of effort and enthusiasm they gave him, contributing to his career despite their modest situation. The genealogical tree indicates that Louis Pasteur had five children as well. Three of his daughters died young, two from typhoid and one from a liver tumor. Only his daughter Marie-Louise had any children. The pastel on the wall represents the last of his descendants, Louis Pasteur Valéry Radeau, who died in 1970. He provided most of the collection of the museum, which opened in 1923. There is no descendant of Louis Pasteur that is still alive today. Note the impact of death on a 19th century family. Child mortality as a consequence of contagious illnesses and neonatal fevers was very high. Louis Pasteur contributed to the lowering of the death toll by demonstrating the efficiency of hygiene and quarantine in fighting against infections and contagious diseases. Louis's children were rocked in the wicker cradle, whereas he was the one to wear the white silk bonnet shown in the glass case when he was baptized in the Collegiate Church of Dole. Louis stayed in Dole until he was 2.5 years old. His parents settled in Arbois for good when he was 8 years old. Before going to the next room, look at Louis's boots in the display case and try to guess his shoe size. Then you can move on to the second room, the man's room. The young Louis Pasteur was considered an average student by his teachers at the Arbois Secondary School. From the age of 13 on, he showed interest in the arts and started drawing the Arbois notables in pastel. Those portraits adorn the walls of this room and show his sense of observation, which would become a precious skill for the future scholar. The young Pasteur's artistical talent did not distract him from his dreams of upward mobility. He passed the baccalaureate, the high school diploma, twice, in which he got the mediocre mention in physics and chemistry. He then defended a thesis on crystals, which is shown in the display case amongst the pastels. He was rewarded with 1,500 francs. encouraged by his teachers, Jérôme Ballard and Jean-Baptiste Dumas, and by the physicist and member of the French Academy, Jean-Baptiste Biot, Louis wanted to enter the French Institute. First, he taught chemistry in the Strasbourg University before becoming dean of the Lille College of Sciences, then director of the scientific studies at the École Normale Supérieure. He was a demanding professor with his students and lacked subtlety in terms of interpersonal relationships, but he was the one to introduce practical activities to science classes. At a time when research was not funded, Pasteur was aware that a scientist had to communicate if he hoped to spark interest and get financial support. He cared a lot about his image, and he did not hesitate to ask his photographer to alter his picture, as shown by the handwritten letter in the display case. Later on, the artists Lafont in 1883 and Callot at the beginning of the 20th century depicted him in his laboratory, along with his instruments. The microscope, which despite its low magnification allowed him to see large microorganisms, the flasks containing culture media, which still highlights the appearance of mold as provoked by smaller germs, and in particular the laboratory notebook, in which he painstakingly recorded every step of his experiments. Pasteur could also rely on his wife Marie, the daughter of the chief education officer of the Strasbourg Academy, to support him with the communication work. She helped her husband with the gestures of everyday life after he had a stroke, which left him hemiplegic at the age of 46. She would take down his dictated research notes, read his reports, and act as his first audience. Émile Roux, Pasteur's assistant, said, "Mrs. Pasteur was not only an incomparable partner to Pasteur, she was his best collaborator." The close-knit couple corresponded to the image of the perfect couple of the 19th century, respectful of the social and moral norms of their time. That good reputation gave Louis the credibility he needed to make his groundbreaking theories heard. At the end of his career, Pasteur lived in material comfort, but that had not always been the case. After the 1870 war, he knew a period of financial struggle, which lasted until he was awarded two national rewards by the National Assembly, one in 1874 for saving the silkworms, and another in 1883 for discovering the vaccine for anthrax in sheep. You can now move on to the legend room. When the scientist received his second national reward in 1883, the people of Dole organized a great party in his honor, the images of which you can see in the Veroscope, the stereoscopic camera. After he discovered the rabies vaccine in 1885, Louis Pasteur was a renowned scholar in the entire world. In France, he was nicknamed the secular saint of the Third Republic. He died in 1895 and received a national funeral service, after which his body was placed in Notre Dame while the crypt was being built in his honor under the Pasteur Institute in Paris. The watercolor presented over the chimney shows that crypt, drawn in a neo-Byzantine style by Charles Giraud at the request of Marie Pasteur. The couple now lies there, framed by the four theological virtues: hope, faith, charity, and the very Pasteurian virtue of science, added by Marie Pasteur. Louis Pasteur remained an icon up to the middle of the 20th century, and his portraits appeared on stamps and banknotes, but also on beer labels and camembert boxes. You can then move on to the fourth room, also known as that of experiments. The first glass case on the right at the back of the room shows Pasteur's first works on crystals done in Strasbourg. This first investigation is a story of fraternal twins. He had to understand why two seemingly identical chemical substances found in wine barrels, tartrate and paratartrate, behaved differently. By looking at them through a magnifying glass, Pasteur noticed that the crystals were asymmetrical as our two hands are, and that they only possessed a small facet on one side of the crystal. Placed either on the right side or on the left side of the crystal, that facet diverted the light from the polarimeter on one side or on the other. Those works heralded the birth of synthetic chemistry and gave him the understanding needed to differentiate the organic world, the world of the living, from the mineral world. It was of great use to him in a time when some scientists still defended the existence of spontaneous generations and thought that inorganic matter could give birth to microscopic living beings. The next showcase exposes his works on fermentation. Pasteur worked on wines in the Jura. He showed that wine could turn into vinegar when affected by bacteria. He suggested killing the bacteria by heating the wine up to avoid that transformation. In 1865, at the age of 43 years old, he patented the process, which quickly got the name of pasteurization. He then adjusted the technique to beer. In 1886, the German chemist Soxhlet adapted pasteurization to milk, so as to eliminate the bacillus of Koch from the beverage, which was responsible for tuberculosis. As he further experimented on the Jura vines, Louis Pasteur detected that grape juice turned into wine under the action of yeast. It is not visible to the naked eye, and it is the same yeast that is found in beer and bread dough. Those build up on grapes as they grow. Pasteur prevented the yeast present in the environment from contaminating the grapes by wrapping them in sterile cotton, thus isolating them. The juice, collected while the grapes were shielded from the air and the yeast present in it, remained grape juice and did not become wine. No yeast, no fermentation. Pasteur also demonstrated that microorganisms are not spontaneous generations. At the time, many scholars thought that microorganisms appeared without parents, as if by magic. The debate was intense, and Pasteur put an end to it with that indisputable experiment realized in 1878 in his vineyard in Montigny-lès-Arsures. Louis Pasteur established that yeast was responsible for the transformation of grape juice into wine. They are not produced by fermentation, they actually provoke it. The third case displays another very visual experiment that Pasteur did to show that spontaneous generation did not exist. Those flasks, done by Pasteur, are over 150 years old. Pasteur filled them with sterilized calf broth, which is very attractive for the microorganisms living in the air. For over 150 years, the microorganisms have not been able to enter the sealed flasks and their contents remain intact. On the contrary, the open, straight-necked flask allowed the entry of microorganisms and the development of black mold which ensued. The swan-necked flask, although open, forbade the microorganisms' ascension, Indeed, they are subject to the law of gravity and fell in the first curve. Therefore, germs can be stopped mechanically. The fourth showcase alludes to the works on silkworms that are also presented in detail in the exhibition Silkworm Underlands on the second floor. The last showcase tackles works on vaccines. Between 1880 and 1885, Pasteur elaborated four vaccines: the chicken cholera vaccine, the sheep anthrax vaccine, erysipelas vaccine, and at last, the rabies vaccine. Pasteur referred to Jenner's discovery of the smallpox vaccine in 1796 to explain that contagious diseases are provoked by microorganisms, the virulence of which can be attenuated by placing them in an environment unfit to their development. He thus obtained weakened germs which, once injected, did not cause illness but protected the recipient if they came into contact with a more virulent form. In the 19th century, rabies scared people even though it had affected less people than smallpox or diphtheria. Contamination occurred through an animal bite, often by the local farm dog. The virus, present in the saliva, migrated in the victim's body and reached the brain during an incubation period of about 30 days. Then, symptoms would appear: a swollen throat, the inability to swallow, headaches, and a phobia of water. Death rapidly occurred. As soon as the symptoms appeared, the patient was doomed, and it is still the case today. Pasteur had been marked by a childhood memory: a man named Nicole, bitten by a rabid wolf near Arbois, and whose numerous wounds were cauterized with a red-hot iron, still showed symptoms and had to be put out of his misery. In the 19th century, the victims of rabid animals were often bled on all four limbs, then smothered between two mattresses. For his researches, Pasteur cultivated the virus in the brains of live rabbits and obtained an even faster fixated form of rabies that could cause symptoms in only 5 days. Then he weakened that laboratory virus by drying fragments of the rabbit's bone marrow in a double-piped flask, visible in the glass case. That vaccine, being 6 times as fast as the virus, could be administered after contamination and still be efficient. The bitten people now had a delay between the bite and the moment they could receive the vaccine. The first human being who benefited from Pasteur's discovery was an Alsace boy of 9 years old named Joseph Meister in 1885. The child had been bitten 14 times by a rabid dog and was considered to be condemned to death. His rescue attracted many people who had been bitten from the entire world to Pasteur's laboratory in the École Normale Supérieure in Paris. Pasteur was 63 years old and he was famous worldwide. He took a subscription with the money and founded the Pasteur Institute in 1887. To continue the tour, go up to the second floor through the balcony. This is the exhibition Silkworm Under Lens. This exhibition is about scientific works on Bombyx mori, the domestic silk moth. For millennia, silk has been a source of wealth. We then understand why the silkworm, the insect that produces the precious fiber, is the subject of so many scientific publications. The room by the canal shows recent works. This docile insect produces a fiber that is flexible, light, biodegradable, biocompatible, and more resistant than steel, and it has been studied by scholars all over the world. The French genetically modified it, hoping to turn it into a protein factory. The Chinese looked into its intestinal microbiome and are trying to modify the seasons of silk production. The Italians are trying to use the fiber to imitate bone marrow and produce personalized blood adapted to the needs of different patients. Nowadays, the Bombyx and its silk are the basis of innovating products. In the street-facing room, we go back in time to mention works that were conducted by European scholars from Olivier de Serres to Louis Pasteur. In 1865, Pasteur's old teacher, Senator Jean-Baptiste Dumas, asked the scientists to save the silkworms that were being decimated by illnesses. Pasteur isolated the pebrine and flacherie and showed that the fastest, most efficient, and most financially viable way to control those epidemics was to apply rules of hygiene and quarantine. If Pasteur found in those experiments inspiration for dealing with epidemics, he also showed that vaccinal research is often long, expensive, and not always successful. Hygiene and quarantine are more efficient in slowing the spread of contagious diseases, as the recent health crisis has also shown. The audio-guided tour ends with that temporary exhibition. Thank you for coming! You can continue following in Pasteur's footsteps by discovering his house and private laboratory in Arbois.